So I am starting this recording. All right. So this mitzvah that we're on now is the mitzvah that says, do not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your fellow and not bear sin because of him. Okay. This mitzvah is lined up right next to the mitzvah of v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, love your friend like you love yourself. So what's the mitzvah of rebuke? What does it mean to rebuke someone? No, not to push away. What does
revenge?
It mean?
Is it revenge?
Not revenge.
No, criticism.
Yeah, rebuke means to constructive criticism. So it's important for us to know that.
Good.
That's tough. You know what I mean? I don't know about you guys, but it's, you know, sometimes it comes very natural, like to the people who, you know, you feel you could say whatever you want to say to, your husbands and your kids. You're very good at constructive criticism, right? And it's not even so constructive. It's just, blah, 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 you did this, you did that, blah, 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 right? So first of all, the Torah is going to teach you how to criticize with sensitivity. But then there's this part of us that you, like, you see your friends are doing things that you don't think are so great, right? And you don't want to say anything. Why?
You don't want to hurt their feelings.
You don't want to hurt their feelings,
they
and
can
also
be angry.
They can be angry, and you're afraid about rocking the boat and jeopardizing your relationship. Like, it is tough. Today, how do you think people do with criticism? Very badly. Okay, so we're really in a generation, like all the great rabbis are telling people, like it is tough, tough, tough to criticize your children, to criticize anyone. First of all, there's this underlining low sense of self that everybody is really suffering from. We're not made out of tough stuff. You know, when we grew up, I don't know, like, you know, my mother used to say, yeah, stupid idiot. Right up, straight as is, right? There was none of this, oh, I'm not sure you're doing that right. You know what I mean? Or like, that's not nice. Right? It was, you dummy? You know what? This is what you think you should be doing. No, did anybody else have that? Okay, so we were made out of much tougher stuff. Like, even when I'm watching my kids today, like, you know, raising their children, it's like, darling, what do you think? Do you think you want the pink one or the red one? And me was like, here's the pink one. Okay? You know, like, what's going on? Okay, so I'm not saying yes, no, maybe so. I'm just saying we're living in a generation of people who are extremely sensitive and really haven't had to toe the line. Like, we've been really, in more than many ways, very pampered. And we're very used to getting what we want. We're very used to, you know, putting, like, just touching the phone and getting 1,000 people to speak to us and do whatever it is that we needed, etc., right? So it's not that we have a lot of, what's the word? We don't have a tough, we're not made of tough stuff today. We're not made of tough stuff. So criticism is like, how dare she? Okay, you have to realize something. When you're living with a Torah understanding, you're actually hoping that the people around you want to see you be the best that you can be. You actually want them to tell you what to do and how to be better. I know it's a hard reality. David HaMelech and Yonatan, the Torah tells you, were best friends. And why were they best friends? Because they said to each other, you're going to be able to tell me what I need to hear. And that's what I want. I don't want you to give me all the, you're amazing, you're the best, you're the greatest, you're so outstanding, you're everything. I want you to tell me where I'm lacking and where I can grow, and I want to be able to feel comfortable with you telling me that. And if it's always going to be, I'm so perfect, I'm so great, I'm so this, I'm so that, then I'm really, in the end, not going to get too far, and I'm not going to get anywhere. So we need to find a comfortable balance. So when it talks about this idea, so it divides it up in three ways, okay? So there's actually three parts to the mitzvah. One is, you shouldn't hate your brother in your heart, which means what? You see somebody doing something wrong, right? And it's really not a good thing. If you never feel comfortable being able to point it out to them, sooner or later, what's going to happen?
They
may find out themselves, or you're just going to keep resenting the behavior that they're doing. So the Torah is telling you, you don't want to carry this in your heart, right? Somebody is doing something that you really, you feel for people. Like, today people can get into big mischief. Okay, we're going to go through this. You have friends hanging with the wrong people, being a little too flirty, a little too free, a little too this, a little too that, a little too many drugs, a little too, like, too many drinks, too many parties. Let's be real, okay, everybody in this room.
Right. But then there's that line of, who are we to be judged?
So that's what you want. You want to make sure you have good friends that you can feel comfortable saying that, and they can feel comfortable saying that to you. We're really in a very sad state of affairs because we're so afraid about this being judgmental. We're so afraid of everything has to be so PC. But in the end, it can end up being to everybody's detriment. Why? Because these people are never going to change. You're going to end up holding this stuff in your heart, right? Because you're going to resent not being able to say it and not being able to work with it. Also, it says, you shall rebuke your fellow, right? And not bear sin because of him. That's huge. Okay, so what does this mean? This is tough as Jews, really tough. But we're really responsible one for another. Isn't that tough? That's tough. We don't have that option to say, well, you know, they're just making some stupid choices. Like, it's just, they're just, you know, they made the bed, let them sleep in it. You know what I mean? Really, the Torah is trying to tell you, you're really obligated. If you really love someone, you really want to see the best for them, and you want to see them be the best. So you are obligated to point this out. So why? Because you love them. So you are going to criticize someone, or you're going to point something out, or you're going to try to redirect somebody, not because you, but because of them. That's the only time the Torah will let you do it. So yeah, let's say it is bugging you, like this is getting on my nerves, but that cannot be my motivating factor. My motivating factor has to be because I care about that person and I want to see the best for that person. So that means when we're about to open our mouths and criticize, we better check that out. Are you about to yell at this person, like, you know, redirect or say something to this person because it's something that you care for them, or it's because it's bugging you, all right? So number one, the Torah tells you it has to be for them, okay? So that's number one, okay? Number two, it has to be done privately. So anybody who, like, yells in front of somebody else, oh, I can't believe this, and this is the way you behave, and it's in front of other people, you've already made a big mistake, all right? And that's not the way criticism is done. So criticism has to be done because you love that person, you want to see the best for that person. It has to be done privately, and it has to be done with sensitivity. So those kind of, like, you know, remarks like, you always, and you always get into trouble, and you're just a this, and you're just a that, that, like, all-inclusive, that just destroys the person, right? So this is the whole idea that Torah is such a sensitive reality. If you ever see the way the Torah works, the Torah always says, like, Yeled Tov. That means boy good. Okay? Yeled Ra, boy bad. So what does it mean? You're always a boy. Number one and first and foremost, I respect you for who you are. What you did right now is tov, is so amazing. What you did right now, ugh, not so hotsy-totsy. But I always respect you. You are who I respect first and foremost. You get it? So before I start going, you know, you're the bad one. It's not. It's what you did is inappropriate. Or what we like to use a lot is you can be so much more. Let's not take the bar down. The bar deserves to be up here. This is who you really are. Do you see what I'm saying? So you want to criticize with that kind of sensitivity. Okay, perfect. Now, there is a time when you cannot criticize. Just like there is a mitzvah to criticize, there is a mitzvah not to. So when would that be not to? I'm not answering it. You know
it. In front of people.
No, in front of people.
When someone's actually doing the thing.
When someone's actually doing the thing, if it would be private, you could say it nicely. Nope. When can you not? When what? When you're angry, for sure. We said because you have to be sensitive.
I'm not sure, but I think you're not allowed to do it at a shiva.
Okay, maybe yes. Maybe that's because it would be publicly.
Shabbos, no.
You cannot do it if you know that person cannot hear you. If that person will just take this criticism and blow, and then just turn it around on you and end up disparaging you and making you feel like a shmata, and they're just going to be going on and on and on and on and on and on with the blame game everyone else, then the Torah tells you you have to be quiet. That's very interesting. Okay, so then this is something important, because guess what? There's times when you're yelling at your husband, okay, you're yelling at your kids, and all you're doing is getting yourself into a bigger trap, okay? Because what they're doing is just losing respect for you. They're not gaining respect for you. You're putting yourself into a very vulnerable position. So the Torah tells you, you have to be very careful, okay? So I'm going to throw something out to you guys that has been bothering me for a couple of years. So can I do it? Okay, I can't believe I'm doing it on a thing. But I'll tell you, many years ago, many, many years ago, I went with a good friend of mine. I was working for Eish HaTorah at the time. And they took us to meet these rabbis. And they were Sephardi rabbis. And Sephardi rabbis are amazing. All rabbis are amazing. So the Sephardi rabbis said to me and this girl, because you know, it says here that you can't bear the sin for someone else. So I want to really get an honest evaluation once and for all. He said to us, like, when we see people dressed a certain way, that it's our obligation to just say to them, like, do you know you're going to get sick because you're dressed like this? Do you know you're going to burn in hell because you're going to dress like this? Do you know that the mitzvah of tznius is so important? Do you know? Do you know what I mean? And he really said to us that we will bear that sin because we never said it to people directly. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, let everybody sit on the fence. I'm just curious. I'm just curious. It could be, I want to discuss it because it bothers me. Like, were we supposed to let people sit on the fence? Or do you say to people, you know what, ladies, let's get real? So what do you say?
It's in the approach.
It's in the approach. So what do you mean by in the approach?
Well, there's a way of, you know, you can't come and attack somebody and say, do you know this is how you've got to do it?
I think you have to know where a person was. Was that woman wearing her boobs out in a mini skirt and suddenly she's wearing it a little lower, a little up? Each one.
So you're saying where
growing.
That person is
you
in that
position.
You don't
know where position. That person is at that time.
Yeah.
How they've grown, right? Because not everybody could dress like that. It's impossible.
Okay, so that's what we'd say is a normal consensus?
I don't know. That's
like, I'm curious. I'm really curious because there are people, if you go online, you will hear rabbis. Like, I'm not,
yes.
I'm
we
not saying
it
badly.
Yeah. We have that in Israel.
I'm not saying it in a bad way. I'm not saying, I don't mean this. I am asking this from my heart. I'm asking this.
I can imagine not for sure that that's... Sometimes that's what I get nervous about. If this is what you do, then this is what's going to happen. But we don't really know that, right? It's not as simple as if you do this, this is the punishment.
Right.
So
right,
that's also
right,
an uncomfortable
right,
thing.
Right,
this
right,
is how this
right,
is going to happen.
Right,
right?
Right. I mean, but there is a reality. Do you know what I'm saying? There is a reality. I'm just bringing this up. Trust me, I myself can't make up this decision.
The scare tactics can bring out the worst.
Right. And then there are some people...
It can turn the other way.
Right, I think it can turn the other way because I know I'm very uncomfortable with that type of stuff. For me personally, that's why I never talk that way because I can't myself talk that way. But then, you know, you'll see these people... I'm not saying this from a bad way. So what is this really teaching us? So I guess it's also really teaching us you have to know who you're rebuking. Do you know what I'm saying? That you have
know
to
your
know
customer.
Your audience and you have to know your customer. And I think what Barb said is a really beautiful idea also, that before you criticize someone or point something out, you have to know where they're coming from. For all you know,
more.
Right?
That could be them covering up more.
Right.
Also,
for all we know, we just said, oh my gosh, don't you know
it's
sneeze? And this person says to me, this is like I haven't dressed like this in 20 years. I'm being sneeze, right?
But all Jewish people are equal at the end of the day, whether you're Orthodox, conservative, we're all Jewish
but
people. And especially a Jewish woman, right? They're still Jewish women. So
right.
We have to be careful how we talk to them.
Right.
Even if they're dressed that way, not
right.
to turn them away more
right.
from the faith.
Right.
Especially in this world.
Right,
right.
But on the other hand, I'm going to just play the devil's advocate of what these rabbis are saying, is that we're saying that we're not giving people a true reality of the consequences of their actions. Like, in other words, then if we never really... I'm just being honest, guys. Like, I hope, please...
But
you know I'm not judging anybody or anything. It's something that's been bothering me. Like, it's been bothering me. Do you know what I mean? As a person, and as a person, you know, teaching for so many years, like, have I cheated people out by never really...
Girl, it goes back
I'm
to
just asking. I'm asking. Please, I'm asking.
It goes back to how you started this, with all the political correctness and the sensitivity. So when you gave the example about how your mother would say things, when we grew up in South Africa, if you were very smart, at school we had to wear a uniform. So if you were very smart, you got academic colors. So your blazer, your jacket was like you got
different colors.
So everybody knew you were smart or you were really good at sport. And everybody knew.
And if you won, and there were prizes at the end of every year, you got the math prize, the English prize, the science. And if you didn't, if you didn't get that, and you wanted it, you didn't go, it's not fair. Nobody, it was not about nothing. You just tried harder. If it was important to you, just try harder. So with this political correctness and the sensitivity, kids don't actually, they have a false sense of how good they are. Because I can tell you, if you looked in my son's bedroom and you saw all the trophies and the things, he was in the worst team, but the worst team also had to get a prize. So you look at all this and go, this is a sports genius. No, not at all. he would tell you, the kids know it's kind of fake. But they're numb to it. And I don't think we're doing, I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think we're doing a service. So then when we see people not doing certain things and they're clinging for something and we don't, I don't know how to say it, but when we don't say, I don't think we'd be, we're not setting up anybody for success. And it's up to our own demise, right?
Yeah.
I think it would just turn people off completely. Yeah, I knew a woman, and I don't want to.
These are all
I'm not going to say a name, but she converted Orthodox. And at the time, the rabbi in our shul told her that he's really shocked, and she really became totally Orthodox, and she was converted, whatever. Took her a few years, and he said he was so disappointed in her that she didn't wear a shaitel. You know, and she covered her head, and she did everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And she had expressed to me how much she disliked him saying that to her. She felt
this is
so,
very tough.
And now she does later on, but it was at the time.
At that moment,
was
it was
very,
tough. These
and
things
think
are
women
very,
do
very
know.
Tough.
Is that the only thing
I think
that's
no, I'm not. I just use smears as a simple example. I'm not like throwing
maybe
the smears game out, but I'm just using it.
I don't think so. I think she did it on her own.
You think
she
did
it
on her own, but you never know.
She was very hurt that he did that.
Yeah,
she
never liked
him because of that.
It's tough.
I don't know. But I think women do know. I think they do know how they should or how.
I think
dress. It's not like they have no idea.
Right.
Yeah,
they
see.
Right.
So
and
I'm
they
saying
know.
It's not only
so
that. It's not only that.
I think
Leonie, I'm wondering if I got what you meant. It's not only that. I'm just saying, like, to be able to say the bigger, like, even for my own self. I'm talking even for the religious people. You don't think religious people make mistakes? We're all making mistakes. So say everybody's, you know, yenting and shul. You know, yenting and shul is a huge issue. Mm-hmm. There was like, I think, one shul in Europe that was so makbid that no one could ever talk. It's the only shul that didn't burn down.
Yeah, I agree with that. I was in
shul. Do you know what I mean? Like, so I'm saying, like, you know what I'm trying to tell you? So what I'm trying to say is, like, I think we're all forgetting the end of the story. Like, we're all kind of like, it's like what you said, like, we're all forgetting the end of the story. Like, it's okay to lose, and there is a consequence to not being the best player in the world. And if you want to be a better player, you'll try harder. So that's what I'm trying to say. But I'm just being honest.
Right.
I'm saying it. I feel like I say it to my own self. Like, I don't change enough. I don't take on enough. I don't realize that life is short. I don't realize that there is a consequence. Because I just keep going, I'm okay. It's not such a big deal. Like, relative to the rest of the world, like, what's such a big deal? But really...
But that's not true,
girl.
But
I think it's
No, you know what I'm trying to say? This is a very deep conversation, guys. I don't know. I just felt like I had to bring it up because I was listening to these two
even
rabbis.
It's even more confusing now because things are very much more mixed up than they used to be. Like, just talking from, like, a 20, you know, 20 perspective. Like, you'll have, like, I have Orthodox friends that keep Shabbat, keep kosher, but not sneu.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of, it's there's all different levels.
All different levels. So what I think the end of the story is, what you want to say to yourself is, I want to grow. That's
keep
all.
Learning.
What you want to say is, like, maybe I'm not there yet, but I appreciate that I need to change. And that getting closer and closer and closer is what I'm aiming for. Because I'm not just looking for life in this world. I'm looking for life in the next world, too. This is going fast, man. Going fast. We've been in Vernas for 13 years. We're having a party this year. I'm not letting that happen. 13 years, bar mitzvah party. Verna, did you blink your eye? I blinked my eyes. Let's see what's going to happen in the next blink of 13 years. So I'm just trying to say, like, we do have to start to think about this. You know what I mean? Because otherwise we will sit on this fence forever.
Educated,
yeah.
Like, we come here, I know personally, I don't want to go to somebody who's preaching down.
No, no.
I love to come and just listen and learn a little bit and take away.
Yes, and make that change and do that little more. And that's what I love and appreciate, but we have to keep thinking that we're going to do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what we're here for. Like, that's what, like, we're starting a new year. So that's what I'm saying. Like, just learning this mitzvah of criticism. If this will make us more sensitive the next time we criticize, right? And we learn, you know what? We're going to think about it. We're going to think about it. And if we don't do it right, we are making a big mistake.
But
and that mistake costs.
Rather than knocking that person.
Yeah.
And if
you know that they will blow up at you, like a lot of people have even troubles within their own families. You have the aunt who's, who just is that way, and you have the mother-in-law who's like that, and the daughter-in-law who's that way. You know, with these people, your mitzvah will not be to criticize, right? And that's not going to be so simple either. But I'm just saying, we're going to have
really
to be real. And with the people that we really love and the people that we really know, you know what I mean? We're going to have to really explain. We're not going to be able to go, oh, it's just okay. It's very tough today. Right? So many people are intermarrying. We're going to have to start that way from the beginning.
But those we can allow for the explosions because we know they're explosions.
Right, 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 right. Okay? Okay, so let me just see if there was anything new. So it's very interesting. We're saying, like, when you're beginning relationships with people, right, you just start getting married and this and that, it's a good feeling to be able to know that you are allowed to voice your feelings. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know when you're married and you're, like, afraid to say anything? Like, he should know what I'm thinking. Okay. When he definitely does not. Right? Right? At all. So you can feel good. This Torah is telling you, don't hold this in. Don't get all angry. But actually be able to speak to people and, you know, tell them the reality. Okay.
Timing is everything.
Yes, timing is 100% everything, okay? Try when you're about to voice your criticism, you should not be venting your frustration, okay? Which happens a lot, okay? So try not to vent your frustration, but to keep your cool. So you want to speak up, you want to speak out, but you want to make sure you speak softly. And not only to the people in your family, but at work. You know, if you are in the position of being the boss and you have people who are your subordinates, the worst thing you can do is to criticize harshly, criticize quickly, criticize loud. You could destroy the person, right? So this is what. So that was our mitzvah for the week. Okay, now we're going to get into the parsha. So we're going back to the whole big cycle, the Torah. We're coming back to Bereishis. So I asked this on Shabbos. Why in the world do we have to do this for the rest of our lives? Like, do you realize, like, every year we do this again? We're sitting here for the 13th year, back into Parsha. So why?
Because we're different.
Something new.
Yes, okay, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So great answer. So number one, you're very different. You're listening to it from a whole different ear, okay? As you mature in life, and as you are in different circumstances in life, the Torah is going to resonate in a whole different way. And also, no matter how much we learn, we are scratching the surface of the depth of the Torah. Every day comes up a brand new idea. So you have a message and you have a lesson no matter where you are. So Koheles is King Shlomo. He wrote this book, Koheles, and he said, there is a time under the sun for everything. You know, there's a beautiful song, right? A time to laugh and a time to cry and a time for peace and a time for war. So I want to just explain to you through a very interesting story, a true story of these two great Hasidic rabbis. One's name was Reb Elimelech and one's name was Reb Zusha. Okay, they were brothers. They traveled through Europe, all right, in the times when the Jews had it tough, all right, they didn't have jobs and they're persecuted and it was not a good place, right? So they would travel through to teach people Torah and to inspire them. And they would go and hang around with the lowest of the low. So they were hanging around with these people who were real riffraff, and there happened to be a robbery in the city, okay, in the town. So they figured, who did it? The riffraff. And they happened to be with them, so guess where they went? To jail along with these guys. Okay, so Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech are now in jail with this whole riffraff. And Reb Zusha and Reb Elimelech, like, they're okay with it. They're very famous for the Gamzu V'tova. You know, this too is for the best. So they're sitting in jail. They're confident they're going to get out. And they realize it's time to daven. It's time to pray the mincha service. Time to pray the mincha service. So Reb Elimelech gets up. And Reb Zusha gets up and he's going to start to daven. And Reb Elimelech says, you can't. we are in a prison cell, and there is only one disgusting pail where people relieve themselves, and it's a very foul odor and very awful. So Torah tells you, when you are in such a circumstances, you cannot pray. So this Reb Zusha starts crying, I can't believe this, I can't pray, this is terrible. And Reb Elimelech says to him, what are you talking about? This is not the time to pray. By not praying and God's telling you not to, then you're connecting just as much as if it was the time to pray. So this is something, this is what Kehelis was really trying to tell you. There are many times under the sun. There are times that are happy and sad and good and bad, but every one of those times, the Torah, which is the instructions to live in, has given you a prescription of how to connect. You will never be alone, no matter which time you are in. You are never abandoned. There is always something for you to be doing. There is even not to be doing, will be doing. Okay, so let's say you see when somebody, God forbid, dies, until that person is buried, you are not allowed to do a single mitzvah. Do you know that? And it's not easy for people. For people who are practicing, usually, like before I eat, I make a blessing. When my parents died, I wasn't allowed to make a blessing until they were buried. So it's like you almost had to stop yourself. Why would God say that? Because he says, now this is a very hard time. And now you cannot be distracted by anything. Now you have to sit and mourn the loss. It's very interesting, until this person is buried. It's very interesting, like there's like a psychological, you know, walk through the park here, that Hashem is saying there is a time for everything. So at the end, this Reb Zusha got so excited by what Reb Elimelech said, they started to dance around the pail. Okay? They were like, whoa, we're going to do this, you know, with simcha, the fact that we can't daven. Anyway, they made a whole bunch of noise, and the jailkeeper came by and said, what is with these Mishigoim? Like, what's going on in this jail cell? So the non-Jew said, this is crazy. These guys were talking about the pail, and before we know it, they're dancing around the pail. So the jailkeeper goes, yeah, let me show you. And he takes the pail out. And then they could daven.
That's beautiful.
So that's a beautiful story. Okay? Okay. So what is so interesting about this whole reality is that we sit in this room, and in this room, some of us are sitting next to the pail. We're not in such a great spot. And we seem like it's not an easy time for our lives. It's pretty foul. Right? And other people, we can stand up and daven mincha like this. But what's Hashem saying? There's a time, and there's a time. And this time will change, and this time will go.
It's a big circle.
It's a circle of life. But throughout all of those times, I am here with you. And throughout all of those times, you can be connected. Beautiful idea. I really think it's such a beautiful idea. Okay, so now we're going to get right into the Chumash. So it says into the Chumash, it says that Hashem created by Yitzar, like he formed man, all right? So it says that word with two letters, Yud. Okay, so really it should just be with one, but it says with two. So why? It stands for two Yetzers. What are they? Yes, perfect. Okay, so man was formed with two inclinations. The Yetzer Hara, this inclination towards evil, and the Yetzer HaTov, this inclination towards good. Thank you very much. Like, you know, wow. Why can't we just have one Yetzer? Right. Why do we have to have two Yetzers? Okay. And let's understand exactly what they're made out of. It was like two pieces of matter. So you've got this, like Hashem says, I took man and I formed him from the earth, which is a lower part of matter, lowly matter. And then Hashem says, and I blew into him this breath. Okay, so when you blow your breath into something, like pretend you have a balloon, right? Where is my breath now? In the balloon. So now the balloon has part of me. Okay, so the Zohar says this breath that Hashem put into every single one of us means that we have a part of the Almighty that is godlike and eternal. And that's what we strongly, strongly believe as Jews. Okay, so you have been given now the gift of these two pieces of matter. And now what? Now you have a choice to decide who is running your show. This earthly piece of matter, are you devoted to body, or are you devoted to soul. But the choice is yours, okay? So God did not make us a robot, and we're not all perfect, and we're not all evil. Hashem said, guess what? We're going to be partners in this program. I gave you the greatest gift. There is no other creation on earth. No monkey, no giraffe can make himself a better monkey or a better giraffe. He's just an instinctual reality. Okay? So you have this lower side of you is called the Nefesh HaBahamis, your animal soul. And the higher side of you is called your Neshama. And that side of you can speak. And that side of you can think. And that side of you can choose between right and wrong and good and bad and true and false.
Is that why some people wear a goggle?
Yes. Yes. That's 100% wise. That's 100% wise. You know when you see these Hasidim wearing these belts? It's to actually show the separation of their, the, like the higher soul to the lower soul. You're 100% right. Good for you. Good you brought that up. Okay, so you are going to have to do something very incredible. So my daughter, Racheli, who just had a baby, Baruch Hashem, Mazel Tov, had a little girl.
Yeah, we want to hear the story.
Yeah, so I'm going to tell. So she had like one of these like labors from hell. Okay, so what happened? She had to be induced from zero, like from zero, like nothing. So it took 48 hours, all right? So it was really like no fun, okay? Absolutely, Baruch Hashem. No fun. She was screaming the entire time. And what was she saying? Give me a C-section. Okay. All right. So we gave her an epidural.
Sorry.
We gave so many things.
Sorry, just a very quick question.
Sure.
And I'm just trying to understand. Non-Jewish people, they also got the bread, but...
Okay, very good question. Okay, so let me tell you this, because this is a very important question. So there is, no, it was a great question. Okay, so everyone is made, we say, B'Tselem Elohim. We're all made in the image of God. So non-Jewish people definitely have that, because how many incredibly wonderful non-Jewish people make an incredible decision, which I think is huge, is to become a Jew. Mm-hmm. Like, just think about that one, okay? Mm-hmm. So they are created B'Tselem Elohim, which is in the image of God. We are created B'Dimus Elohim. What's that? A miniature of God. Why? Because we're so super special, great, and wonderful? No, because we have a responsibility. We were assigned a job. It was called being the priests and a light unto the nations, right? We are the kings and the priests, the light unto the nations. So God said, guess what? You're like B'ni B'chayri Yisrael. You are like my children. So you're going to have to be extra good and a great light. So we can be a light, and we are a light. I mean, for a nation that is, that's what the beauty is of being able to teach now. I'm teaching thousands of years after the Torah was given. And if you go through history, the Jewish people have always been a light unto the nations. The greatest minds, the greatest, you know, everything is us, all right? Right? Einstein and Freud and all these other people. So they were a light in their way, right? But what Hashem wants from each and every one of us to be a light is to be kind and good and not to cheat and to treat everybody with dignity. Do you know what I mean? That's what it means to be a light unto
the
nations.
The same.
The non-Jews the same. What do they have to do different than us? They have only 7 Noahide laws, and you have 613.
Yeah.
Okay? But when Shlomo HaMelech was the king of the, you know, in Israel, the world came towards Israel. And they used to bring 70, you know, sacrifices for the 70 nations of the world. And people came to us for wisdom. But not just the wisdom on how to build a computer and an atom bomb. You know what I mean? Like, those are very nice things. But the wisdom of, if I taught you how to use a computer and an atom bomb, you really need a lot of moral understanding on how to use them. Because they are very dangerous tools today. Do you see what I'm saying? And in the wrong hands, they're deadly. Okay? So, yes. So, we are going to have to work on this mission that we have, because we're going to have to give birth to ourselves. So what was going on with my Racheli Nebuch? She was like screaming, right? I can't do this. But guess what? It was already like 30 hours. So guess what? What was the answer I said to her? You are doing this. You're terrific. You really are doing this. right? And then the doctor said something very cute. She said like this, Rachel, there is no such thing as a pain-free labor, okay? Which is not an easy thing to hear when you're in terrible pain, but the truth is that's us. We have to labor to give birth to ourselves, to fight the contractions between this Yetzer Hara and this Yetzer Tov ain't no picnic. Okay? Because one day it's this way, one day it's that way, one day it's depression, one day it's anger, one day I can't believe they did this to me, and now I want revenge, and the next day it's jealousy, and the next day I want to be a saint, right? So you see what's going on here? So you really, this is labor. You are fighting between this. Okay. So my Racheli had a whole bunch of stuff, the epidural, this and that, and then it was wearing away. So now we were in big trouble. Like, really, after this, I am going to doula school. Okay? Like, I feel like I had my placement. Okay? And I'm ready. Okay? So I realized something. What was her biggest problem? She kept saying this. When is it going to be over? How many more hours? When is it going to be over? Rightfully so. And I agree with her. Like, we would all be doing that. So the only way I could get her to stop was to say, Racheli, we know one thing. Baruch Hashem, the end goal is this beautiful baby. The end goal for all of us is hopefully we will leave this world with a Shem Tov. We will have given birth to a beautiful baby called Barbara and Daniela and Ginny and everyone else in this room. We will have been given birth to that. That people will say, you know, oh, I remember them. They brought a smile to our faces. She gave charity. She was such a good kid. You asked her for her notes, they were there on the table. Do you know what I mean? You will have given birth to that. So I said to Rachel, you're going to give birth to this beautiful baby. But it's off in the distance right now. Right now, we have to go through the pain and the process. So what we're going to do, I started this crazy meditation, almost put myself to sleep. Okay. So what did I start to tell her? I said, we're going to go on the beach. And our dream is to travel this beautiful beach. But we can only do it one step at a time. Do you know what I mean? And that's what I keep saying. One step at a time, and one wave at a time, and one this at a time. And that's what we have to do now. It really worked. Like, thank God, it really helped. It helped. It helped me at least.
You went out. It was
out. Me and Shimshi were having a great time. For us, it was. I loved that.
How did you stay up 48 hours? Are you wondering
there
the whole time?
It was so hard. Yeah. I'm telling you, I left before Yontif to go, and then we were the whole time we were like betting: is it a Hashana Rabba baby? No. Shmini Atzeres? No. Looks like a Simchas Torah baby. Like, we went through the whole process of Yontif. But anyway, so this is what I want us to understand. How important this is.
Were you there when the baby was born, at least?
Yeah, for sure. No, I was there the whole time. So we're going to have to understand that this is what it is, that you're going to have to go through this process, and you're going to have to stay focused. Now, you are living in a very interesting time period in history, in Jewish history, called Chevlei Mashiach, birth pangs. Isn't that interesting? You are living in the birth pangs of the Messiah. You are living in transition. Just watching the election makes you realize that Hashem Almighty, okay, we are headed for transition, all right? I'm telling you that now. I've never seen anything like this, okay? Has anybody seen anything like this?
Well, then I tell people it's the worst versus the worst. You have to believe in Hashem.
Yeah, so you're going to have to, this is what I'm saying. So right now you're in transition. So you're going to need this focus and this process. And you're going to have to realize the world may be going like this, but we're going like this. And it's one step at a time. It's one, like, understanding. And it's one relationship. And it's one this. And I have this opportunity. Either I will be this animal or I will be this soul. Right? Perfect. So the Chofetz Chaim says the process goes like this. So you can't fall asleep on the wheel. The Chofetz Chaim says there was this wealthy man and he rented a wagon with six beautiful horses, like a wagon driver to take him to, you know, wherever, to Varsha, okay? So they're riding on this wagon, and the driver's driving, and he's in the coach, and the guy ended up falling asleep, a wealthy man. So the coach driver is, like, holding the reins on the six horses, and he notices that the guy's asleep, so he figures, you know what? What's so terrible? These horses are doing such a good job, so I could fall asleep. So he falls asleep, and he lets go of the reins. What happens? The horses go nuts all. Like, the horses go running off, and the coach turns over, and everything is like a whole balagan. And then the guy falls out of the couch, the wealthy man, and he says to him, what did you just do? What happened? And he goes, what do you mean? The horses look like they were doing such a good job. So I felt like I could take a little schluff myself. So the Chofetz Chaim says, that's you and your Yetzer Hara. You cannot let your guard down. You think, eh, big deal. So I don't eat and I don't sleep and I have a party and I this and I that and I get drunk and whatever I do. Then you let your little horsey go wild. You are no longer the soul that's taking care of this body. Then body will run off into the wild blue yonder. So I gave this class on Wednesday. There were some very smart women there. Very smart women. So one of them was saying, she married already 35 years, and they have a pact, her and the husband. She's very smart because he's a traveler. You know, he travels for business. He, you know, has all these business meetings with everybody. So they made up like this. He can never have meetings with women alone. Very smart. This is like Torah principles, but she came up with this on her own. They're not very proud of her. You cannot have meetings with women at night, and you cannot drink. And he said to her, no personal trainers that are male. I think that's very wise, besides the fact that I'm a trainer. No, but I'm just saying it's wise because I've seen very bad things happen from that. No personal trainers that are men. And general, he doesn't even want her to go to a mixed club. Okay, these are not like necessarily religious people, as you know what I mean, practicing the way we would think, right? And this is what she said. Anyway, so I said, like, 100%, you're so smart. Like, this is smart. This is what we're talking about with the horse. When Hashem put Adam and Chava in the garden, he said, you're going to work it, right? And you're going to guard it. So it's, like, really smart for us to work with our horses and try to make ourselves really good, but then you have to guard it, right? The same thing like the alcoholic, right? Let the horsey get wild. Now we got to get the horsey and retrain him. And then what do? We guard that horsey. We never put him in front of liquor and drugs and booze and parties again, right? Because we understand what could happen. So this is what the Chofetz Chaim was trying to tell you. So it's an interesting idea. This Rabbi Rosenfeld, a true story, it's a very funny story, but you have to realize that we are the same. So he was driving on Avenue U, and he was going to this park, and there was a guy in front of him who had a doggy in the car who was staring out the window. You know how doggies like stare out the window like that? So the doggy's like watching, you know, a Lexus and a Toyota and a this and a that go by, and everything's fine. And then suddenly this good-looking Chihuahua doggy comes by, and this dog, the car is going 25 miles an hour, jumped out the window, dived out to run after this female cute dog, right? So the person who owned the dog didn't even notice. He didn't even notice. So, like, this rabbi is honking and honking, and finally the guy stops the car, he runs, and he has to go get his doggy. The point is, we are no different than that doggy. There is this animal side of us, right? Like, you could be amazing on your diet, and you're eating well, and you think it's great, and somebody brings chocolate mousse cake home, and you could kiss the whole deal goodbye. You've just jumped out of the window at 25 miles an hour, okay? So we have to be very real with ourselves. Now, what is the hard part? Your husband and you are married 30 years, and you say to him, darling, I know you're going on this trip, but I really don't want you to go out at night with this woman, you know, female buyers. Really not a good idea, and I don't really want you to drink with them either. What? Married 30 years, you don't trust me? And your kid says, I'm going to this party and I'm going to be out till 4 in the morning. Really, I want to know who's going to be at the party too. What? I've been on the planet. I'm 20 years old. You don't trust me? So what's the answer?
I trust you. I don't trust other people.
What else? I trust you. I trust the real you. I trust the soul you. But I don't trust that little animal part of you. And that's the answer. The real you I trust. The soul I trust. What really makes you you, I trust so much. But that little animal, a mischief maker number one. Him I don't trust. And not only do I not trust your little animal, I don't trust mine either. So we're going to have to be very careful. We're going to have to guard, and we're going to have to rein him in. It's not so simple. So everybody in their place where they are, we all have to understand, talk to ourselves, and be real, right? Like there's a lot of casual kissing. You know, hi! You know, it was supposed to be a funeral. It's like a secular funeral. That casual kissing was getting really not casual. And I was like, wasn't on the cheekies anymore, you know? And I was like, whoa, that's not a casual kiss and really not appropriate at a funeral. You know what I mean? So everybody has to be really careful. Do you know what I'm saying?
Whatever you're saying, I can understand.
You have to be very careful. Just saying for who you are, where you are.
I
we all
to
have
say,
to
yeah.
know
oh,
what
oh.
we have to guard. Like, where the things are. And that could be with your anger and with your impatience and with your eating habits. I'm talking about everything. We have to know what this animal represents in us. And even the animal who talks to you and tells you you're a loser. Guard yourself from those stupid voices because they're made to take away all of your potential. That's what it is. So this rabbi, great rabbi, he had a very smart son. Major chutzpahdik, big troublemaker. Okay. So this great rabbi said to his son, you know what? Why can't you behave? And the son said, I have a yetzahara. Okay? To which the father said, oh, if you only could act like the yetzahara. The Yetzirah never gives up. The Yetzirah always does what his job is. Why can't you be like the Yetzirah? To which he said, but the Yetzirah doesn't have a Yetzirah. So what's the moral of the story? We do. And we just have to be careful with it. And if Hashem can't get you in the beginning, I told you that. There's many people in this room, and I know you all. Truthfully, you're all too good. You're all amazing. And if anybody called you up to do a favor, you guys would be first in line. I know everybody here. There's a one person I can see who would even say no. You would be first in line. So then what would the Yetzirah try to do? Get you to regret it. He would make no good deed go unpunished. Okay, right? You would go to do the carpool, and we'd be pouring rain, and the car would break, and the kid would throw up in your car, and then you're like, you know, why did I say yes to this? Okay? He would make you try to regret it. So we have to be on top, right? You know, like you're not feeling it good, and your husband says that line, your kid says this, they didn't do the homework, my boss did this to me, you know, like all these things. We have to be on top, because we have to realize all these things are coming, right? To be that challenge that we're going to have to ask ourselves, right? Animal or soul? So I was talking to somebody, I gave a class on Wednesday, like just to three college girls, really, really sweet. So it was about finding yourself, right? So I kept telling them, oh, you have to find yourself and find yourself and find yourself. So finally one of them said, which was a really good question, how do you find yourself? Like it was, you know, like you go around and throw these cliches, and then finally the person, you know, catches you on the cliche. Like, what do you mean find yourself? So how are you going to find yourself? So I said to her, the thing that changed my life was when I finally learned this idea. When I finally learned that I really am made out of an animal and out of a soul. That's the first way to find yourself, is to be able to say animal or soul. How are you going to find yourself? Through the decisions you make. And those decisions are going to reflect who you are. So you want to think before you decide. You want to find yourself? First define yourself. Right? Then you will find yourself. Right? So I thought it was like such a good idea. Because it's very interesting. If you believe in the world that we live in has a very secular perspective on creation, and if it really tells you that you really are a descendant of monkeys, then you really don't have very far to go.
Right.
You don't really have a chance. Because all you really could be is a better trained monkey. But no matter how much you train a monkey is a monkey. So there was once a great debate. The Rambam really had this happen. The Rambam worked for the Sultan. And he had a lot of, he was an advisor and the doctor to the Sultan. And there was a lot of people who were very anti-Semitic and hated the Rambam, wanted to see him, you know, destroyed. So his thing, the Rambam, was obviously that man was above the animal and that man had a soul and he was amazing. And they were, no, you can train animals to be just like men. So they actually took cats, it's a true story, and they trained them to serve. Could you believe this? Like waiters. They trained a cat to be able to hold a tray, stand on it. Well, if you go to a circus, you could actually envision this. Stand on its hind legs and, you know, carry coffee and tea, all right? So they were showing the Rambam, you see, it was going to be this big, great debate. So the Rambam said, I'm not worried. And he had a little box with him, and he said, I will prove you wrong. And he opened the box, and a mouse came out, and it was Tom and Jerry all over the place.
That's cute.
And that was the end of it. So this is what you have to understand. If you come from a belief that all you could be is a better monkey, then you're not going to aim too high. But if I tell you that you could be godlike and that you have a soul that could be eternal, then you have a different vision onto what is the purpose of life. Okay? So he said a good line. Rabbi Rosenfeld said, if President Clinton would only have known the laws and kept the laws of yichud, you know what yichud means? You can't be alone in a room with a woman. Then he would have gone down in history as a great president.
That's a
good point. Okay, so now. Okay, so now, this is an interesting thing also, because I want you to know how we trip up. So it's a big, I feel bad because I didn't get to... poor Janet came to hear the other stuff I didn't get to, and I didn't get to it. I know, because I did the mitzvah part, but I'm going to try to really put this on quick. Okay, because there's two things I want to talk to you about. So this, I think, is an important one. When you look at this, the Hashem said, I don't want you to eat from this tree of good and bad. Okay, like, right, the tree of the knowledge of good and bad. So it's very interesting. So if you look at that, it says good, like, you know, tov vira, meaning together. I don't want you to eat from something when good and bad is mixed together. Do you know why? Because when good and bad is mixed together and you ate it, you are very subjective in deciding what really is good and what really is bad. And heads up on, you know, there's an expression like, in every lie there's a little truth. Guess what? In every lie there is a little truth. Why?
Because otherwise it would be too obvious.
Ah, 100%. So in everything that looks kind of bad, we like to put into it
a good.
And that's what gets us to do it. So it says that when Chava went to eat from the tree, very influenced, this is what influenced her decision. She was influenced by these three things. The woman perceived that the tree was good for eating, that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was desirable as a means to wisdom. So she took of the tree and she ate. So what was going on here? So this is what she said. It's nice to eat. Very sensual, very tasty. Look, you're looking at the chocolate mousse cake. That's exactly what happens. This cake looks amazing. It's going to be really good to eat, right? Right? Looks great. It's good to eat. And it really is good for my seichel, okay? Good for my wisdom. What does it mean? Because it teaches me how to rationalize. The only problem with rationalize, it's rational lies. That's what it means. Rationalize, that's what the word is from. Oh. Rational lies, okay? So with rational lies, you end up rationalizing that you can do everything. So today's mantra that rationalizes everything is, as long as I am happy. As long as I am happy, it's okay. Right? So we always forget to put this. As long as I am happy at the expense of my children and my honesty, my morality, my family, my kids, my mother, it's all okay. Right? So this is where you get into big mischief. And man, Hashem says, cannot make this decision. How do we see it in history? You look at the Nazis. They made a very clear definition of what is good and bad. Jews are bad, and Germans are good. And therefore, we destroy them. Do you see what's going on here? So you have to really, like, it's not like Hashem was kidding. Shem said, when it comes to certain things, you do are not able to make the judgment call because your yetzahara is so great and your ego is so overwhelming that you will do things that will destroy the world for your own personal gain. So you have to realize, like, World War II is what, 70-some-odd years ago? 48 million people died. Okay? Over a madman, right? So in fact, it's very interesting because when Hashem says to them, he says, Hamin, does that sound like anything?
Haman,
perfect. Hamin ha'etz, did you eat from the tree? So the Torah is telling you, you find everyone's name in the Torah. Everyone's name in the Torah. Haman is centuries, thousands of years later. Hamin stands for Haman. What was Haman's downfall? He had everything a person could want. List his stuff, guys. List.
But he wanted more.
Yeah, but list. List what he had.
Wealth.
Wealth, money,
power.
Good looks. Next.
Women.
Family. 10 strapping sons. You know what I mean? Like, you're talking, he had everything anybody could want. He just didn't have one thing. What was the one thing he didn't have?
Mordechai
wouldn't bow down to him. It's the one thing. These people had, what did Adam and Chava have in the garden?
Everything.
This is Gan Eden. Everything. They just couldn't have
one thing.
So the Torah is telling you, heads up, how much with all, I'm Patasi. How many times you're jealous over the stupidest one thing? You have everything. If you sit and you start counting, oh my gosh, I have this and I have this and I have this, I just don't have that faucet. You know what that is? I just don't have granite counter. You know what I mean? I just don't have, whatever it is, right? I just don't have my name up in lights. I don't know what it is. I just don't have it. The Torah tells you it can destroy you. It is such a worthless waste of time. Okay? So, I wanted to tell you that. And I'm just going to end with this one last thing, okay? Which I think is a beautiful idea, and we should ask ourselves this question. Okay, so last thing. So after...
Is that last thing that you don't have, a thing that you don't have, or a...
It could be a million things.
It could be anything.
It could be so many things that emotionally is taking you out of this world, because
right,
all you can do
it's
is focus on that one thing. So it doesn't even have to be physical. It could be something emotional.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
or it could be a person, a place, a thing.
You all
want
what you have. Because
right. But it's so sad because you can have everything and see that you don't even see it. It's like you don't even see anything else. Haman did not see anything else that he had. They didn't see it either. So it's just something for us to see. So in the end, which is a very beautiful story, is that Hashem yells out to them like he knows that they've done something wrong, right? And they realize they were naked because that's what happens. This Yetzihara gets inside of them, and now the body has a lot more power than it even had before, and now we need like zillions of mitzvahs. You have to understand, the beginning of time is just human beings. We don't need Jewish people. We don't need all this, you know, extra stuff to keep us understanding where God is. Okay, so Hashem says a very important line, and this is important for us too. He goes, Ayeka, where are you? So it's important for us just on a general basis. If somebody has made a mess, right, and done something wrong, it's a really nice idea. Ayeka gave them the opportunity to do what?
Say I'm sorry.
To say I'm sorry and to admit. Like, it's much better than to go, you know, like, oh my gosh, you know, like, that's what you just did. You know, you could just say, oh, looks like the milk spilt, you know what I mean, or whatever it is, you know what I mean? You could give that person an opening, right, to be able to admit. But Ayeka also means, where are you? Okay? Because you have to understand something. Where you are is who you are. Do you get it? Where you are is who you are. Right? So if you're on the phone and your kid is talking to you, right? And you're like, la, 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 la. So where you are is who you are. You are not being a mother who is giving any attention. Where you are is on the phone. You're somebody yapping on the phone. Do you see what I mean? Where you are is who you are. So if your friends are talking to you and you're busy doing this, then you're not really busy being a friend. You're busy texting to somebody else. So you better know where you are is who you are. And also you got to know where you are is who you are. Who you hang around with, the Torah tells you, will define who you are. That's it. Oy la Russia, oy la Shechina. Woe to the wicked, woe to his neighbor. You're hanging around people who like to gossip and like to do things that really aren't the best. You're not going to be able to influence them. Most likely, don't kid yourself, they will influence you. Okay? So very important for us to appreciate that. And then, who you are is where you are. So you need to ask yourself the question. So where am I? Am I in horsey land, or am I in soul land? Am I in the animal side of me, or am I in the soul side of me, right? Because this is, right, who I want to be. So where I am is who I am. So I thought it was just very important stuff. So this week, Mitzvah Hashem, we need a bracha. We should all be able to overcome these Yetzaharas, and we should really be able to stay focused and be the people that we want to be. Right? And we should marry to see Mashiach, because I think the election is next week. Okay, thank you so much, everybody, for coming. Please join the Bat Mitzvah program or Challah Baking. And in 2 weeks, I really want you to come at Shul, at our Shul. We're having a really good speaker. And Saturday night also at Cheryl Traber's house. I'm going to email it to you, because if you guys can't come to Shul, you should come to her house. It's like an open, like from Lava Malka. Everyone is invited. It's my son's professor at university. He told me he's great, and we actually got him to come. Wow. He's a history professor. So anybody who really likes, like, you know, the history of the Jews and what goes on, I think it's really amazing. And I'm sure if he talks about contemporary history, it would be great. I don't have it with me.